With the trees, we find our ancestors. With the trees, we connect to the past, bring knowledge forward and walk into the future. Dr. Noel Nanup, Noongar Elder.
Between the lines.
Between the lines.
Between the lines. Local writers, publishers and poets discuss local books and ideas.
Hello, it's Danny and you're on Between the Lines, an RTRFM podcast about writers, publishers and poets. And today I'm sitting down with Dan Jan Martin.
Yeah, I think that's a really critical one is in telling all these environmental stories, it's that line between the hope and also the real concern.
Yeah, the urgency
of it.
The
real urgency of it. Yeah. But you've got to have both because you don't want the giving up, but you don't want the... You know, you need to have that acknowledgement that what we have is still so precious. Yeah, we can live with it and we can make it wonderful.
Dan Martin is an environmental planner and designer who grew up in the coastal Kerry of Denmark, which forms part of the backdrop for his book, published in collaboration with Noel Nanup, Alice Ford, Nansen Robb, Clancy Martin and Mariella Espino-Zuppa, called Forests Atlas. Forest Atlas is a field guide to the forests of southwest Australia, blending maps with artworks, photography and story in celebration of the life and colour of this environment. From the waterways to the ancient Jarra, the Numbats to the black cockatoos and towering Kerry, the Forest Atlas paints a shimmering picture of the interconnectedness of trees. In our chat today, we discuss the origins of this special collaboration as well as the cultural and political impacts of this book on the southwest. This is Dan Martin.
My name's Daniel Jan Martin. I'm a lecturer in landscape architecture at the UWA School of Design. But beyond that, I work as an environmental planner and designer. Really thinking about our cities and our ecoregions and how we might bring design to better care for the environment, really, at a range of different scales.
Yeah, such a huge job and such a nuanced job with such relevance to contemporary society and the environment, I should say. What is the role of an environmental planner and designer? Because I'd imagine that there's a lot more to it than meets the eye.
Yeah, I think scale is that really critical word. You know, this is often one of those questions you get at parties where someone's like, oh, what do you do? And you sort of say, oh, I'm a landscape architect. So they start kind of asking you about the trees in their backyard or the retaining walls. And that is what a landscape architect does. But there's this kind of scaling up from there. So there's great landscape architects in Perth working in local government responsible for tree planting programs that are planting, you know, hundreds of thousands of trees a year.
Okay.
And then sort of scaling up to more the environmental planning scale, so how to work with water systems, river systems, ecosystems to the scale of our region where we've kind of got questions about the forests then that start to emerge and really big ecosystems at really big scales.
So a huge job and a holistic approach to, I guess, architecture, the environment and how all of it kind of connects.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's that question of when we're entering this next geological epoch. You know, we're still really in the Holocene, which has been the melting of all these glaciers and the shifting of our landscape in this way. But the next geological epoch is called the Anthropocene, which is to acknowledge how humans are having such an impact on the environment. And obviously, we look at that critical zone across the world and humans are playing with the environment. So the question is, how do we work with it? How do we live with it? How do we... in times of change, and of course loss and biodiversity loss, how do we best buffer and make sure we can work together?
Yeah, an incredible role, such an important role. Environment being the backbone of all of that, and I'm not a betting person, but I would bet that your love of the environment goes a way back. Did you have was it in childhood? Where did that love for the environment and the natural world begin for you?
Yeah, I grew up actually in the southwest near the forest in Denmark, so a long way from Perth, seemed like a long way when I was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, for most Perth people, it seems like it's, you know, quite far away too, I guess.
But in the context of, you know, Australia, it's not far
away. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, this is really, yeah, you know, they say where you grow up, that's where your values are kind of cemented and where you start to understand the place. But certainly growing up near the forest in Denmark was a really, kind of a profound aspect of my childhood, I guess. But also growing up against more scary landscapes, I suppose, like Albany, where, you know, maybe the water and the rocks are a little bit in tension. And
as a kid, that's kind of huge and terrifying, the
absolutely.
Ocean, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting, the two sides. Nature is, or, you know, landscape is very, very powerful and scary, but landscape is also something that's very nurturing.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I think there's often a link between work, people that work in, you know, the environmental space and advocacy. Is that something that you value in your work? Where do you sit when it comes to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of, there's so many players when it comes to sort of how we tackle environmental questions going forward. But I think advocacy is really critical because I think what we find everywhere is that people have an innate connection to the place that they're in, whether they're walking around their local lake or they're going to the beach on the weekend or they're visiting the forest.
Yeah.
Like, we're in a phenomenal a bioregion here in the southwest of WA. You know, it's often called a biodiversity hotspot, and you'll hear that thrown around as a really good thing. And it is a good thing. It means we have, I think, 7,800 native plant species in this southwest.
That's incredible.
Corner. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And you compare that to, you know, Cape Town or other floristic hotspots like California, and it's off the charts. But then the hotspot is given to those places where human impacts are in conflict. That's
right.
Why it's the hotspot.
So hotspot is defined by it being somewhere where there is that human impact?
Where there is that conflict.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the conflict is the key there.
The conflict's key. So we can't lose that when we talk about how amazing our ecoregion is, because the other hotspots of the world, you know, in Texas around Houston, or, you know, in LA or Cape Town or Tel Aviv, other parts of the world where interesting, often also Mediterranean climates like ours, wet and dry, you know, wet winter, dry summer. But these are hotspots. They're hotspots because of those impacts, whether it's urban development or whether it's mining or logging, in the case of until recently, the Southwest forests. These are human impacts that threaten the health of the ecoregion.
Okay, very interesting. I didn't think of it like that, and I think we often, like, when I think of the word hotspot, it has a negative connotation for me. Like, there is significant human impact and it's kind of like a lost cause in a way. Like, it is, there's been a lot of damage. But I like thinking of it from the perspective of, we actually have this incredible, unique and diverse range of, environment in the Southwest. And I think that's a nice way of looking at it, especially when it comes to the environment, when it can be, times just you feel so hopeless with all the damage that's being done.
I think that's a really critical one, is in telling all these environmental stories, it's that line between the hope and also the real concern,
the urgency
of it,
yeah.
But you've got to have both, because you don't want the giving up, but you don't want the, you know, you need to have that acknowledgement that what we have is still so precious. Yeah, we can live with it and we can make it wonderful.
Absolutely. I love that. And that kind of leads us into the Forest Atlas, which is a beautiful field guide. I have a copy of it here and it's just stunning. What paper is used? Do you know?
It was all recycled paper stock.
Yeah, okay.
So that was a nice touch. Given
just
that it's
feels
about
lovely.
The trees.
Yeah, it feels lovely, and it's very fitting to what it's all about. It's a guide to the forests of the southwest of Australia, and it blends maps with artwork, photography, and story. And as we were kind of alluding to, it's this wonderful, positive kind of celebration of the environment and life. How did this project come to be? Take us back.
Yeah, it's a really good question, because it wasn't always that positive, you know. I started working on this project actually in 2019 when I started really as a research project with the Bielia Group and the Lewin Group. And they're both groups of scientists and professors based at West Australian universities. The Bielia Group were formed around the Row 8, Row 9 protests as this sort of resolve never to have this happen again.
Yeah.
And so a really important voice there in Perth and the southwest. But this project began, as a whole series of maps. it's something that's not often understood, is that our government, we as a society collect so much data and information on our environment and our place in general, whether it's social data or economic data, also environmental data. And the way to get to that data is often quite tricky. You know, there's a policy of open data, but it's not always out there in the open.
That's so true. It seems so convoluted, doesn't it?
It is.
Anything to do with numbers is convoluted to me because I'm not a numbers person, but it's generally not accessible to, I guess, a lay audience, people that don't kind of, you know, divvy in that sort of world.
Absolutely. The accessibility is really critical because there's this innate interest, I think, on the part of everybody about our environment. But this project actually began as I was sort of working in a context where there was logging going on, and working with the Bilia Group and the Forests Alliance and some other groups through the university, it was a question of, okay, if we're going to protect forests, and you know, every year at that point the government was putting new forests on the logging plans. It was a question of where should we really try and work to save, if you like, from those logging plans. So that's where we started to connect with traditional owners through the southwest, you know, Noel Nanup being one of those, and the scientists themselves and the community groups, to really understand, okay, where do we need to protect next? And I'm sort of midway through this big project, which was going to be much more of a sort of cautionary atlas, when this major sort of breakthrough announcement was made by the McGowan government to end the native forest logging in late 2021.
Okay, so it kind of, that then changed the course of the project.
Absolutely. We got Alice Ford, who's a wonderful local artist, Nansen Robb, Clancy Martin, Mariella Spinner-Zuppa, who are local photographers, on board to really then tell this really celebratory story about the forests. So it really changed its tone.
Yeah, what a fantastic thing to happen during that process. I can only imagine the elation you all would have felt having advocated for so long, and then, you know, the work you were doing being so tied to the forests and the conservation of them, and then to have that announcement, what did it feel like?
Yeah, for me it was a recent involvement, but I just looked at the movement as a whole, going right back through, you know, hundreds, thousands of people over many, many years. And, you know, there was an announcement 20-odd years ago to end old-growth forest logging, but still the native forest logging continued, and even the old-growth forests were quite fragmented and not particularly well protected. But really going right back to the 60s and 70s, we've got amazing advocates in Perth and activists working to protect these southwest forests, which are just an incredible part of our region.
I love the southwest. I don't know why, but every time I go there, it just feels like I belong there. It's just this, like you said, that connection to nature. And I just think it's one of the most beautiful places in the world. And we should absolutely be protecting it. And I'm so glad that this project is here and that we're able to learn more about it as well. But I'm wondering if you could just, everyone knows about forest clearing and I guess has a general sense of what it's about, but what actually is forest clearing? Like, what is the process, and to what extent does this harm an ecosystem as big as the Southwest?
Yeah, it's a really important point. It really is at the heart of our impact here in the Southwest since colonisation. I mean, you've really got one of the largest land clearing operations that's happened anywhere in the world, which is the Wheat Belt. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what we have now, of course, is phenomenal. It's this arc of tall forests that extends from Perth all the way through almost to Albany. And this is, the Forest Atlas was about telling this story of this connected system. But if you go, you know, if you go east from here, this sort of gradient into woodland, it wasn't always golden farmland and rolling hills.
I mean,
that was, and so many of the impacts we see in the Wheat Belt around issues like salinity, but also our own rainfall decline in the coastal parts of the southwest. A lot of this is being attributed now both to climate change and also the massive land clearing that's taken place across this landscape. So the picture certainly isn't all rosy. There's a part of the Forest Atlas where you get to this series of red maps, and the first there is the map of forests and woodlands in 1826, so prior to colonisation, and it's the entire landscape, of course. So there's this really big shift to grapple with, I think, in terms of reckoning with our own environment.
Between the Lines.
Between the Lines.
Between the Lines.
You are the editor of this project?
Yeah, so my contribution was the mapping and a lot of the text and really bringing the project together. But yeah, it owes so much to the art, which is Alice Ford's art is wonderful. Yeah. And the photography was about kind of feeling old and sort of timeless. So there was analog photos used a lot of the time. But they show really, really those different ecotypes and different regions.
Yeah, it's just incredible. And the role of editor and, I guess, collating all of these different elements would have been huge. And I just think, you know, prior to colonisation, what knowledge systems did you draw on to, I guess, map the landscape?
Yeah, this is a really good one because, I mean, when we look at it from the point of view of knowledge, something like mapping, it's really a highly colonial device. It comes from measuring the land. But I see a role for it, and I've really seen a role for it in the past 5 to 10 years in the Southwest, to work for the environment as well and to work for culture. Because once we can get things spatially, they have a lot more weight in terms of politics and in terms of how things are governed. Yeah. So the mapping can be a very powerful tool, but it's always important to remember it's just one way of seeing. And part of the book was threading together, I guess, these different ways of seeing, you know, from the cultural voice of Noel running all the way through the book to the photography and the art and then the mapping itself. Mm.
Yeah, so beautiful. As you mentioned, you've spent a lot of time in the Southwest. You lived there for a while, I believe. It's clearly a place that still resonates with you. What do you love most about the Southwest? Because, like I said, I personally just adore the Southwest. What keeps you connected to it and what do you love most about it?
Yeah, I've loved the process in recent years just of walking different parts of the Bibbulmun Track.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And understanding a new kind of landscape every time I do that for 3 or 4 days. There's something about switching off the phone, putting the pack on your back,
so good.
And moving through that at the pace of walking. It's just, it's really special.
Yeah.
It's a great thing that we have in our Southwest, the trail.
Yeah. Mm. So beautiful. And so Forest Atlas is a book that is co-published. A whole bunch of awesome creatives in conjunction with WA Forest Alliance. That was another huge collaboration that you had. What was this collaboration process like? Because I know that, I guess, the journey of this book has changed. I guess the nature of the story that you were telling changed as policy and politics kind of changed. So talk us through that element.
Yeah, this is an important sort of part of the book in terms of its structure. So the book starts off with these 14 sort of interconnected, we call them values in the Southwest Forest. Whether you're talking about the fauna through the Southwest, so it could be the Numbats or the Tjuditj or the Faskagale, or the flora, or the different forest ecosystem types themselves. But the book then moves into this section around impacts. And then this final section around protections. And that protections part is really critical, I think, today and going forward, because there's just under 3 million hectares of forests through our southwest region there. And something that's really critical with the 2021 announcement from the McGowan government was also a promise for a further 400,000 hectares of national parks by the protected areas.
And that announcement was to essentially and basically in broad strokes to end logging.
Yeah, it was to end logging. That was the one side. And then the other side was this new national parks. So even when something's a national park or a nature reserve or another form of formal conservation protection, it's much harder to mine in that area, for example. Mm. The dieback and other land management concerns, they're very different. The questions that DBCA, Department of Biodiversity, Conservation and Attractions, asks when they're managing that land is quite different. So to really increase the national parks area through the Southwest is really critical at this point in time. So that promise for 400,000 hectares led to another project which kind of ran in tandem, but it's published at the end of the Forest Atlas, which was called Beyond 2024.
Okay.
And it's looking to this question of where those 400,000 hectares of national parks should be. So if we've got, you know, something like 1.5 million hectares of possible areas for new national parks, where do we prioritise that roughly that third of new allocation in terms of national parks.
Okay. Do you have the answer? Where would you, with your expertise, kind of place those?
Well, yeah, that had a number of layers. Again, it was all these conversations with Noel and other traditional owners about places of value and also the community. The WA Forest Alliance represents dozens of community forest groups through the southwest. Mm. So they had a lot to say about this. But we used the software and the sort of technical side of things to stack all of these layers and these values. Mm. So you might have areas where there's a lot of numbats or other really threatened fauna alongside old growth forests, alongside areas that are free of dieback or phytophthora. Alongside other values that stack up and pretty soon show you areas of immense ecological value. Mm. And it's critical at this point that those are put away into national parks and protected for future generations, because what we're actually seeing in tandem with this process of decision-making around new national parks is simply, I could say, hundreds of proposals for mining.
Yeah, there are so many ethical considerations you would have had to have made, and it seems like they're guided by these wonderful values. Did you ever at any point kind of have to grapple with any of these values or any of these ethical considerations in the process and the decision making?
Yeah, there were a few times where this became critical. In Beyond 2024, there's a lot of areas where new national parks are obviously not proposed, because you can't propose new national parks through the whole Southwest Forests, the unconserved part of the Southwest Forests. But those areas, when we looked into them and then we actually visited them, it's a really sad story, because you've got areas that were sort of massively, comprehensively logged in the 1990s. Yeah. And the forests through those regions are in a really sort of sad state. So these areas can't necessarily be put into national parks because the values aren't quite there. But in the meantime, it's about showcasing those areas that are really, really strong and really, really valuable.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Between the lines.
Between the lines.
Between the lines. To Noel Nanup, who was another collaborator on this project, there's a beautiful quote from him in the book mentioned at the start, which is, "With the trees we find our ancestors, with the trees we connect to the past, bring knowledge forward and walk into the future," which is just so profound and beautiful. And it makes me think that the implications are not only environmental when we talk about logging and forests being destroyed, but they're also deeply cultural as well. What can we gain in terms of our knowledge of First Nations history in Forest Atlas, and what have you gained from your experience collaborating on this project?
Yeah, I think the critical point there is care. I mean, that's what comes across in so many of the conversations with Noel and other traditional owners through the Southwest. It's this concept of care. It's the reciprocity between the environment and really the self that pervades the kind of understanding, and we could do with a lot more of it today.
Couldn't we? Yeah. Mm. Yep. In terms of Noel's role, was that more in an advisory role? How did that collaboration work and come about?
Yeah, that was an ongoing kind of, in the genesis of the book, we met with Noel and we talked about the different ideas and the ways it could be represented. But all the way through and also that final kind of cultural narrative, connecting that with the book. And in the Beyond 2024 work, looking through those different areas for conservation proposal, that was really important to talk through all of that with Noel. But yeah, beyond that, it's that deeper connection that the words of Noel give us all, and I think that's that critical role for cultural guidance, to really hand that over and say, you know, there's so much wisdom and so much connection there as well.
Yeah, incredible stuff. Did you have a favourite part of producing this book? Had you written a book before? Like, was this a new process for you, or what was the most enjoyable part?
Yeah, publishing a book is quite enjoyable, I find, because you bring together a lot of different things, and that's a real joy for me, making those different connections.
And it was a real collaborative process. It would have been a great opportunity to just connect with people, meet new people, and kind of work together to get this job done. Yeah.
And so, you know, playing through something like, you know, Noel will speak about Jarrah and the meaning of this word in Noongar and the connection there, and then you have the map of Jarrah and then the drawing of Jarrah and then photographs of Jarrah and then an understanding if you're walking through those forests in the southwest where you might be encountering the different types of Jarrah forests. So there's all these new ways of seeing, and the hope is that the people will take it into the field and look at a pretty broad scale, but still nonetheless understand a little bit more about where they are, even if it's just about future protection and those different questions going forward. And you can also look at it through a challenging lens, which is, this area is actually at risk of continued dieback, or this area is in a zone that's really declining in rainfall in the coming decades. So there are those other ways that it's a call to action as well, in terms of actually taking the holistic view of our southwest really to heart, and understanding how it all flourishes and or collapses. Hopefully not collapse, that's a strong word, but it works together as an ecosystem. And that's part of the book. It's saying all of these values are intertwined, and there's an interconnectedness here that the mapping shows, but that the words then reveal, and that the drawings suggest and connect with. So it's the interconnectedness of the trees.
Yeah, it definitely speaks to that interconnectedness, the cultural element, and there are so many dimensions to this project, from, like you said, the photography, they've got writing and Noel's input, and it's great. Every good book should kind of allow you to see from different sides, and I feel like Forest Atlas does that super, super well. It'd be great to talk about the political impact, because I know this is a topic that comes up a lot in policy, as we spoke about. The end to logging was something that the McGowan government instituted several years ago, a huge and incredibly significant decision. And broadly speaking, I guess the book itself has been part of that political change. Can you tell us more about the policy impact of this work?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I guess it has a national... This issue is really of a national significance at the moment, in a few ways. You know, the Bob Brown Foundation and other groups are moving toward this call now for native forest logging to end in Australia completely. A lot of states, Victoria's followed Western Australia in putting native forest logging, effectively banning native forest logging from 2024. But then there's so many other challenges in how we relate to the environment. Minister Plibersek, 30% of all oceans and lands as protected areas before 2030, which then, shines the light back on West Australia and other states of how we actually achieve greater protection in our land. And there's a constant balancing act on the part of policymakers, whether it's the mining, whether it's urban development, and we're seeing this at the moment in the Perth region itself. It's urban development against different Bankshire woodlands that might be at the fringes of the city.
Yeah.
And there's a housing crisis, and there's an increasing population. And so all of these challenges need to be balanced. But I think at the end of the day, the campaign to end native forest logging, it was really led by people. And you have this great moment where 17,000 odd people respond to a government-led survey to say, let's end native forest logging. And so this is a really great sort of message of hope, that is, if we come together as a community, we can have really great impact over policy and the direction of our place.
Yeah, because that's a lot of people. That's an incredible response. Where do you think we're going right in terms of our advocacy and, you know, our lobbying of government bodies and these other bodies? And where do you think we can improve on when it comes to the environment and logging in particular, but perhaps the environment more broadly? Because like you said, it's a laid issue. There are so many things you have to weigh up. It can sometimes feel a bit overwhelming. Where do we start?
Yeah, it's a really good question. At the moment, if we look at just the southwest region, a really big one is the impact of Alcoa and the mining that's continuing through the Jarrah forests. And not that it can't continue. I mean, I think there can be a balance of these things, but the current rate of clearing for Alcoa is something like 60,000 mature Jarrah trees a year, which is Jarrah trees that could be up to 300 years old, more than 50 years old. So that's a lot of trees. So to think about these impacts as a society and gain education around what they mean, I think that's really critical. So at UWA, I teach at the School of Design in Landscape Architecture, and we work across different scales. It could be a foreshore area, or it might be in particular studios, even just a single garden. But then there's these bigger questions about, You know, we're calling it kind of living infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what does the tree canopy do for a whole city?
Yeah.
What difference does it make in 20 or 30 years' time when it's much hotter, when it's much drier, that we've got a thriving, shady city as opposed to a city that's losing trees? Mm-hmm. So these questions become really critical, the same for waterways, the same for how we connect with those. So the urban questions, I think, are really exciting as well as the forest. And they're not necessarily separate. You know, we go up to the hills and we arrive to Rolly Stone or Mundaring or wherever we are, and that's the beginning of our forests area. Mm. And it doesn't really end at the hills either, because it comes down into the city. And so that this idea that the forests are out there, that the forests are Baranup or the forests are Denmark and, you know, the Valley of the Giants in Walpole, it's not the reality. The landscape functions as one, and it connects as one series of systems, and they're all interconnected. And we're a part of those.
Yeah, you're so right. I think we often forget, you know, if we work in an office or if we're just disconnected from news, or sometimes we just don't think how connected we really are to the environment. And I think we can often distance ourselves, or there's this cognitive dissonance of, oh, it doesn't really impact me, so I'm not going to really do anything about it. But I'm sure that there is stuff that we can do in the everyday, and people, when we talk about the environment, are interested in how they can help. I'm wondering if there is stuff that we can do maybe in terms of our everyday, you know, the infrastructure of the everyday. What can we be doing to kind of contribute to this positive impact?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I was having this discussion with someone the other day, and they were just saying, you know, Australians are so apathetic. And I was like, well, I've often heard that word connected with Australians, apathetic. And then I was like, well, if we're just kind on those people for a second, they might also be disempowered. And that's kind of an interesting word, because then if we can empower and we can change that conversation, we might not get apathy as a result. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's not apathy to start with. So that empowerment, I think, is really critical. And I think in some parts of Perth, you see that really strongly. You see those communities are really connected and empowered around particular issues, and that's great. But then there's all kinds of other messaging and connections to make in other parts of the city. And indeed, in parts of the city where the connection to landscape and nature might be very different.
Yeah.
So all of those questions fold into it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Before I do let you go, Dan, what would you like people to take away from Forest Atlas? There's lots to take in, but if there was one key takeaway from the project, what would it be?
I think it's the power of the people's voice. I think that's a really critical one, and it was critical in the ending of the native forest logging. That was such a beautiful moment in the history of environmentalism in this state and more broadly. I think that's the critical one, and just the connection. You know, you don't have to get sort of on the spiritual side to really acknowledge that nature is profound, and that it is particularly profound in this southwest corner of the world. And I think we all connect with and realise that. It's a beautiful thing.
Oh, without a doubt. Such a beautiful way to end it. Thank you so much for joining us today on RTR.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
A big thanks to Dan Janmaarden for joining me on Between the Lines. My name is Danielle Raphael, and it's a pleasure to have your company chatting about all things books. This podcast was produced and recorded at RTRFM on Wajak Noongar Budja. We pay our respects to elders past and present. This land was never ceded. I'll see you next month for more Between the Lines.